Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
On this episode of Narcissist Apocalypse, we have the return of Maud, and we discuss how she left her abuser, getting over doubt, and the aftermath of her abusive relationship. Welcome to Narcissist Apocalypse, everyone. I am Brandon Chadwick, and with me today, we have the return of Maud. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very well, and I'm happy to be here again with you, Brandon. Very excited.
Well, thank you for being here. If you can hear it in my voice, I am a little bit under the weather. I'm going to do my best today. And you know, for people that have not heard your story before, in a lot of ways, you changed a lot of how I do my process of things. First, in the storytelling realm, you know, Maud's episode originally aired in January of 2021, something like that. And then eventually we took it down, but it was called Maud and the House I Fell in Love With. And you introed your whole entire story with this metaphor of your relationship in the house that you fell in love with. And I was like, oh, how do I get other people to start kind of throwing in metaphors like this or start thinking of in things in that way, so because people can learn through metaphors. And sometimes it's easier for people to connect through a metaphor than it is through an actual story that you might be telling. And you also, you know, right at the beginning was like, this is what you're about to hear. And, you know, for me, I was like, I kind of wanted to start to do that more when it came to the show, which was, let's just tell everyone what they're about to hear at the beginning, or let's try to. We're not like a true crime show, even though this is a crime that's going to hide things from you or sneak up on you. But, you know, to kind of build in these different types of storytelling tools to help people feel like they might be where you are. And I think that's what she kind of did with that house, like, metaphor. People felt, or at least I felt, you know, what was going on with you just by the telling of that story, you know, because in a way I could feel the house. I could feel what you were in. You know, you didn't bring up smells, but, you know, you can kind of get the idea of what type of house it was and what it might feel like inside, even the air. And another thing with your story was it's a scary story. And during that whole entire process, you were in a car and you were in a parking lot somewhere. And I didn't understand the gravity of everything. And then I started to get scared for you as I started hearing more of your story and understanding that your ex is someone who is a loose cannon in every way. Very, very scary. And I started getting scared in the sense of like, what if this person comes by this car right now and has tracked you and I'm about to see something terrible? And then I started getting scared, and then I didn't want to tell you that I was getting scared, and I did my best. But that was really the gravity of your situation. That something like that was a possibility and you were trying to get out of your home and doing the best that you could to kind of navigate it. Because as you said, within the analogy, within the metaphor, it was scary to leave that house when that door was open. You know, it felt safer to stay inside for you at that point. So I'm going on this long kind of explanation here of everything, but eventually we decided that we were going to do a follow-up episode. And what happened was I sent an email calendar, an email invite calendar response to you. I don't even know if that even made sense, what I just said. And it went to your ex's. He had it synced with his.
Shared calendar.
Shared calendar.
So he saw it. Yeah.
And from that point, your episode, you know, we took down your original episode.
Yeah.
That thing was scrapped right there. I did my best to scrap all existence of you completely. And then recently I texted you and or emailed you and I said, hey, I think I've got like a voice changing enough ability so it doesn't sound like you. Do you mind if I put your episode back out? Because to me, it's like a really big episode for me in the show. And for people as well, we always hear people that are out of their situations for the most part. And I thought it was important for people who are in it to hear someone who's like really in it. And you are someone who was just very clear with your story of what was going on, which is not always the case, but you were, you know, you knew everything back and forth of what was going on. And then you said, yeah, sure. Like, put it out and let's do a follow-up episode. So now you are here. I've just gone through that giant, long diatribe or whatever that was. And you're out of your relationship, you're out of the house, and you are safe. And it's been a while now. So now, without further ado, I'm going to get out of my way and your way. Maud, the floor is now yours once again.
Thank you so much, Brandon, for that intro. That was really great for me to hear. You know, in telling your story, it's nice to hear that it had an effect on others and also that you appreciated the way in which I told it. And guess what? I'm starting with a metaphor. So I'm starting with another one that I think is even more compelling than the first one. Pardon me as I choke. So an abusive relationship, and certainly the one that I was in, and I think other people are going to relate to this as well. Imagine yourself far away on a beautiful island beach, somewhere in the Caribbean with the white sand and the super clear water and the temperature is just right. And you're stepping into the water and it's just amazing. You feel, you know, like, oh my gosh, I feel so stress-free. This is amazing. I feel all of these fantastic sensations of stepping into this water. And then you start to go into the water a little deeper and now it's all around you and you're feeling supported and you're feeling this love almost and this like oxytocin surges and everything's just, you know, you feel great in this water. But then imagine yourself continuing into the water. And now maybe it's starting to get deeper. You maybe can't see the ground anymore. You can't see your feet on the floor of the ocean. And maybe there's some possible fishes coming by and some other things. And maybe now you're getting so deep that you're having to tread. And the next thing you know, you're so deep that you're actually being pulled into the ocean. You're being pulled down or being pulled with the tide, or maybe you're even struggling to keep yourself up. And then you're diving into the ocean in an attempt to swim, and the water's pressing you down and pushing you down. What felt like heaven just a few moments ago when you first stepped into the water now feels like hell because you don't know which way is up. You're being yanked, you can't breathe, you're suffocating, you're afraid, you're basically taking your world that just was and you flipped it upside down. That to me is the abusive relationship, because you step in with love bombing, you feel this great sensation of this joy and love all around you, and then as you get deeper and deeper and swim further into it, all of that goes away, and the next thing you know is you don't know where you are, and you don't know how to get out. So that's my metaphor for my return. And I'm hoping that other people will connect with that. Or maybe if you're listening to this podcast and you're just curious about an abusive relationship, if maybe that piques something in your connection with what it feels like. And it's hard. It's hard to pull yourself out of this situation. When I last spoke on the podcast, if you haven't listened to the other episode, I talked about a slow kind of rise to this story, which ended in terror. It ended in me in guns, in potential. By the way, I need a follow-up too, because I listened to the episode. The dog from the episode was not killed. The dog was not killed when my ex shot at it. He shot over it to scare me. So I know that I had left a lot of people wondering perhaps maybe what happened to the dog. Good news. A couple of days later, I drove the dog to a animal rescue and the dog was saved. So that dog is alive and well and living. I just wanted to make sure everyone knew that. But back to my story.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
My ex, has narcissistic personality disorder, and a lot of things happened to me over the course of this relationship where he was using various methods of abuse that everyone is probably familiar with: gaslighting, manipulation, confusing the truth, gradually, slowly building stuff up until this big crescendo of him shooting at this dog and me being terrified and hiding and just feeling the most scared that I've ever felt in my life. So after the episode aired and we had that explosion, things actually kind of took a bit of a 180, because I think that he at that point realized that that was like the end before things were going to be perhaps either he was going to have the police called on him or he was going to kill me. I think he kind of like took a moment of like self-reflection, oddly, and was able to say like, well, you know, that was a really bad night and that was really bad behavior. So things actually got better for a little while, as they normally do in a relationship where abuse is involved. You will see cycles, good times, bad times, build up, explosion. So I had a longer cycle this time. Things got better for a longer period of time. But what happened my narc changed the method now. He changed the method of abuse. So what he was doing was being nicer to me during the day. But then when I slept at night, if I hadn't done the things that he wanted to during the day, or if he felt like I wasn't, you know, having the appropriate amount of love and adoration and all the other things that narcs require towards him, he would hurt me at night. So I would be asleep and I would feel my wrist get squeezed really, really hard. And he would press his thumb into my wrist. One time he pushed his hand into the side of my face, pressed so hard that my teeth cut my cheek. Another time he just would lean on me and push me really hard. So what I discovered in all of that, in all of this change of the, like, he's changing the method, was I asked him about it. And in the morning I would say, hey, you know, that you pushed on my face really hard, or you grabbed my wrist. He'd say, I don't remember that. I know I was asleep. I have no recollection. So what I realized quickly was, oh, he's testing the waters. I think he's seeing what he can get away with. I think he's probably seeing how far he can push me. And he might be planning to perhaps do something when I'm asleep where he accidentally suffocated me. So I realized at that point that I was probably in a more dangerous situation than I was before. I had the good fortune of being offered some work out of town, and I decided to take it. And I spent a couple of months away. And in those months away, my life was so dramatically different during my day. I was able to go and do the things that I needed to do, and I didn't have this oppressive force with me constantly. So that really made me want my freedom even more. That was sort of the tipping point for me when I said, okay, now I've had some time away. I have this good fortune. I realized that most people will probably not have the ability to do that or have that situation become present for them. But I did, and it really changed my thinking. And while I was out of town dealing with my job, I was like, okay, all right, I've gotten as far as I can possibly go in this relationship before I potentially am not around anymore. This is the time to take action. So I was saying to Brandon before we started taping that when I was in that period, when I was in the period of like, all right, I've got to go, I've got to get out, I've got to get my own place. This is it. I started listening. I was listening to podcasts. I was reading books. I was talking to my therapist. I was talking to friends and family. I was pooling as many opinions, thoughts, and resources as I possibly could on how to leave. Because we do have information on how to leave, but a lot of it was more like, well, you're trauma bonded and you're going to have to break that bond, or, well, you're going to need to pull some resources, or, well, you're going to have to get over it, or you're going to have to just run. But nothing was like a strategic plan. Everything was just these resources that I couldn't really, I mean, I appreciated them. They made sense, but I could not put them into action. I personally could not make them work for me. So I developed a strategy that I wanted to share with everybody here, the listeners. And my hope is that the strategy that I applied to myself will help somebody else in the same situation that I was actually take the step, dive off the cliff. As I mentioned in my previous episode, I was standing on the edge of the cliff. My toes were hanging off. I just couldn't dive. This is how you dive, if that's helpful to anybody. So the first thing that I did and I recommend everybody do is that you have to remove doubt. You have to remove the doubt that you're actually being abused. So that was a big one for me. I can see Brandon.
That's a big one. Even if you aren't in an abusive relationship, how you get rid of doubt.
Yeah. It's, you know what, it's doubt is something that unfortunately it has its place. You know, it has its place in life, but it's something, it's specifically in an abusive relationship that's going to be your biggest enemy. You're going to doubt that you were ever abused. You're going to doubt that these events actually happened. You're going to doubt that you're actually not the narcissist. You're going to say, it's me. I'm the abuser. Doubt is just everywhere. So how do you get rid of it? How do you stop doubt? The most effective method that I used to remove doubt was journaling. So every single day at the end of the day, whether I felt like it or not, or whether I felt that it was an eventful day or not, I wrote down everything that happened. I would say, this is the conversation that we had. This is the fight that we had. This is what he said. This is what I said. This is how it went. These were the things that were going on. And I wrote it every single day. And it's important that you do it every day. I know a lot of people like, oh, my life is so busy. No. Take the time, take the 5 minutes, take whatever time you have to journal. Because what will happen after your journaling, when you have time, read back a month ago, your truth, the things that happened to you in your own words cannot be denied. You experienced it. So when someone's telling you, whether that's your narc or a relative or a friend or somebody else, when I'm going to say, well, you're exaggerating, you're making too much of it, or that never happened, your own words are your truth serum. That happened. This is how it went down. And when I go back and read a year, 2 years ago, the stuff that was happening, I am absolutely horrified. Like, I can see my pain. I can see the utter terror in my writing. So documenting also helps you should you need it in the future. You can document through your journal, and that may help you should you need it at some point you know, if you're suing for custody or something like that is going on. So definitely journal, journal, journal every day. The next step is that you need to, I had this when I went away, was envision your future. Now, isn't just a broad, like, oh, I envision how I'm going to be. No, every detail. What are you going to wear? What are you going to eat? How is your home going to look? Who are you going to be friends with? You have to detail out every, like a Pinterest board of what your freedom is going to look like. Because when you can envision the life that you want versus the life that you have and clearly map it out for yourself in detail, maybe it's ridiculous. Maybe you're like, I'm going to live in a mansion on the edge of the ocean, whatever it is. Make it a clear depiction of what your life is going to be. And then maybe it is a Pinterest board. Maybe it's a collage that you make that you keep somewhere of all of the ideas and the friends, the names of the people that you're going to reconnect with. When you can actually visualize the life that you want versus the life that you have, you crave it. You're like, I need it. I want it. I'm willing to do anything for that. That's incredible. I can have all of these things. So envisioning your future, really, really super important. And I just want to say, while I'm saying this as well, you do need to keep all of this information super safe. Maybe a friend has your journal. Maybe you journal at work and you keep it in a drawer in your desk. Maybe you have a secret email account that you email this to. So, you know, safety obviously is a priority. So I, you know that I'm keeping that in mind as I'm making these suggestions that you need to make sure that you're locking this stuff up. The next thing that I did was I sought advice only from trusted sources. Only from trusted sources. What does that mean? For me, fellow abuse victims and mental health professionals that were experienced in domestic violence, well-meaning friends, well-meaning family can actually cause additional shame without even intending to. So if you were to say to your loved one that, you know, your friend or family member, you know, you tell them maybe a piece of your story and they say, oh my gosh, what a monster. What a terrible person. Like, that is just horrible. That person is the worst person in the world. If you're in a place where you're like, well, I also love him and love this person, that can actually make you feel kind of shameful that you ever really got into a relationship with this individual, or shameful that you still do have feelings for this person. They can also, you know, one thing that my narc would do frequently would send me texts with emojis, and the emojis would be like an angry face. Now, to most people, an angry faced emoji, if you're in a stable relationship, might just be like, ah, oh, whatever, you know, my partner is annoyed at something, no big deal. An angry face emoji for me was a very, very traumatizing thing. For me, that meant that I was immediately weak in the knees, immediately terrified, because that meant when I got home, I was going to be dealing with basically a monster. I knew that he was telling me in advance, I'm already angry. Just wait till you come through the door. So if somebody, a friend or family, saw a text that just had a little angry face emoji on it, they might minimize that. They might say, oh, you're making too much of it. Or I get angry face emojis from my spouse all the time. Like, that's not really a problem. That might then cause you to think, well, maybe I am making too much of this. Maybe this isn't a big deal. What they're lacking is context. They don't see the whole picture. They just see the little tip of the iceberg. They don't realize that there's a whole giant iceberg under there. Asking for advice from mental health professionals experienced in domestic violence and other abuse victims is a better way to go, because they know what you mean when you say an angry face emoji brings me to my knees. So I think it's important to take anything that you hear from friends or family with a grain of salt and understand that they're not experienced in the same way that you are, even though they may be trying to be supportive. The last thing that I'm going to say was the one that made me kind of angry. This made me a little angry when I heard it the first time. And then I actually developed a love for it. It's a choice to stay. So when somebody, I read a book called The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker. If you have not read that, please run, get the book. It is going to change your perspective on what you're going through. But Gavin, the author of the book, experienced abuse as a child. So he knows firsthand what it's like to be in a situation where you're being abused. And it was horrible abuse that he experienced. But at one point in the book, he said, it's a choice to leave. And he said that he got a lot of flack for that. And I kind of bristled. And he said, it has to be a choice to leave. Otherwise, it's also if you can't choose to leave, that means you're stuck. It's a choice to stay. It's a choice to leave. If you have no choices, then your power has been removed. And that really leans into the concept of learned helplessness and understanding that when you are truly believing that there is no better way for you, then there is no better way for you. It's a choice that your abuser is abusing you, and it's a choice that you're sticking around. So you have to choose you. You have to choose to say, I'm stronger than this. I have the ability. I can do it. Are you going to go through hell in that choice? Absolutely. You're going to go through hell, but you're going to go through hell staying. So it's picking, you're just choosing which hell you're in. When you leave, when you make the decision to leave, I used to watch movies as a kid. I've seen a couple of movies about abusive relationships, and I would see the woman leave, right? She'd cut her hair. She'd jump off the boat in the middle of the night. She'd swim to safety. And then she'd go to this new cute little town in this like little country town where she would be, in her cute little house, and she'd meet this like rancher, and the two of them would immediately be in a relationship, and it'd be like, and here's my rancher, my hot rancher boyfriend. It's like, this is, and everything is great. That's not that. That is so far from reality. You're going to grieve the loss of the relationship. You're going to grieve the good times that you had with this individual. You're breaking an addiction. You are addicted to this person as well. So your brain is hardwired to appreciate when you're in an abusive relationship, the worse the lows are, the higher the highs are when the abuse stops. When you have an episode and all of a sudden your abuser's like back into the love bombing phase or back into the hoovering phase, the high that you feel over the stopping of the abuse is so intense that you crave that feeling. And that is something that you're going to have to deal with, losing that addiction. So just know that it's you're choosing, you can choose to leave, and you understand that it is going to be a difficult time for you. There's rainbows and unicorns on the other side of it. Once you get through that wall of fire, you are going to have a much better life. You're going to feel a sense of calm, freedom, support, love, whether you have another person in your life or not, that you can't even begin to imagine is even possible when you're in the situation that you're in. Some other things that I just wanted to say that I thought were really helpful for me is, and these are just more like just points that I'm making, Darvo is the glue of the trauma bond, or it was for me. So if you don't know what Darvo is, it's an acronym: deny, attack, reverse, victim, and offender. So an example of Darvo, if you want this in real time, would be, I said to my ex, it really hurt me when, and this actually happened, it really, really hurt me this one night. I was so afraid when you were so out of control. You were drinking, I was trembling, you were threatening me with a weapon, and I just felt so scared. My abuser hears this and says, when are you going to let this go? This was 2 years ago. How dare you bring this up? This is just unacceptable that I have to keep hearing about something that happened so long ago. And you're not even remembering that I was upset that night because you refused to do the things that I asked you to do. And I asked you to do them repeatedly. And you pushed me to a point where I actually wanted to punch you in the face. I wanted to hit you so hard that night, but I didn't, because I have self-control and I know how to manage and regulate my emotion, and you don't. So that was like, that was a Darvo example. And like, you know, but Darvo, when you, if you're an empath, if you're somebody that's codependent, if you're somebody that's listening and believing, if your abuser is super powerful, somebody that you admire, respect, trust, have feelings of safety around, and this person is telling you that, if you are like me, the first thing that you'll do is say like, oh man, I pushed you to that. I feel so bad. I can't believe that what was wrong with me? Why wouldn't I just have seen his point of view? He was hurting. He was upset. If you're not in an abusive relationship, you're thinking probably, what? If you are, you're like, oh yeah, I identify. But Darvo, what happens is that they keep using that tactic and that strategy on you. You start to become more and more ashamed of yourself, more and more ashamed of your behavior, and you keep trying to win them back. So if you are trauma bonded to your individual, there is most likely Darvo happening to you every day. Just take a moment, journal it, like I said, at night, and you'll actually see it. I would also say your strengths are usually your abuser's weaknesses. So when you think about what you've been through with your narc, how many times they've attacked you, how many times they've made you feel bad about yourself, how many times maybe they physically hurt you, emotionally hurt you, verbally hurt you. You took the licking, you know, you took the proverbial punch and you got back up again and you showed up in the morning. You got your kid ready for school, or you got your dogs walked, or you went to work and you did the thing, and then you got home at night and boom, there's the next punch. And I'm saying punch as a metaphor. You don't necessarily need to be hit. You are doing it repeatedly. You are getting walloped, and you lay down and you stand back up, and you do life in the middle of all that. If you are in a relationship with a narc, you know that if you point out one little itty bitty thing to this individual, they collapse to the floor. How dare you say that to me? You are a horrible person. My God, like, what a terrible thing you said. You've really hurt me. You know, in that little interaction, who's the strong one? It's you. It's you. It's you. Your strengths are their weaknesses. So if you are confident, if you are successful, if you are self-assured, if you are making friends, those are all things that your narc is going to hate. And it's because they see your strength. Now, remember that strength when you're worrying whether you have the capacity to lead. You are 100 times stronger than you've ever given yourself credit for. I also want to say, this is a little bit of a dark cloud here, but please do not minimize emotional and verbal abuse. I think there's this stigma attached with, well, I haven't been hit yet, or he didn't put his hands on me. So therefore, I'm using the he pronoun, but please know that it can be they, them, it can be she, her. We're talking about any relationship abuse happens between man to man, woman to woman, and vice versa. But emotional and verbal abuse, as I was listening when I was reading Coercive Control by Evan Stark, who is also another, it's a great book, great author. That is the lead up oftentimes to physical abuse and death. So know that just because somebody is only verbaling, or I shouldn't say only, but that's the method or the tactic that they're using, that does not then mean that that violence can't happen in a second. When I was early on in discovering that my relationship was abusive, I went to speak to a police officer at a domestic violence shelter, and I didn't want to do it. They literally pushed me in there like, you must speak to this officer, go talk to her. And I sat down and I told her my story. And at that point, it was early on. So it wasn't even like with some of the crazier stuff that happened later on in the relationship. And she said, I'm going to tell you a story right now, and I want you to listen to me. And I'm not even really supposed to share this information about another person because this is a domestic violence shelter and this situation is confidential. But since it's already in the papers, I might as well share. She said, I knew somebody just like you with your name that came in here exactly 1 year ago with exactly the same story. She told me the same methods. She told me that she hadn't been hit yet, that she wasn't, she was fearful, but not sure that she was in an abusive relationship. We just discovered this morning her body and her child's body because her husband killed her kid, and killed himself. And she said he never hit her up until that moment when he killed her. So I don't mean to strike fear into the hearts of everybody, but I do mean to say that emotional and verbal abuse can be the only form of abuse that you experience until you're not around anymore. So know that you shouldn't minimize it, and you should not wait for rock bottom. You shouldn't wait for the point where you're saying, this is it. I'm at the end. Now, don't wait for rock bottom. Know that if you're being abused, if you're asking yourself today, I feel unsafe. I feel scared. I don't feel supported in my relationship. I feel afraid to talk to my partner. You are being abused. That's it. So, yeah, the other thing that I would say that I really found helpful too, because post-abuse, I started to experience complex post-traumatic stress disorder, unfortunately. Was this something that can happen to people when they have been in an abusive relationship over a period of time? For me, it was roughly 10 years. For others, it can be longer. And some people will never experience this. I recommend, if you are thinking or feeling differently in your body or if you're feeling kind of unsure about some of the symptoms that you're experiencing, definitely check out the book, The Body Keeps the Score. What it's talking about is how trauma can actually change your brain chemistry and cause you to completely think a different way. So I think towards the end of my relationship, when the abuse was at a fever pitch, I was doing a lot of reactive abuse, which actually, Brandon, we had talked about that in the episode, reactive abuse. And for anybody listening that's not clear on what reactive abuse is, it's your abuser is abusing you. You explode. So then it's like you are reacting to the abuse, and you in turn become, I'm using air quotes here, the abuser, because the individual provokes you to a point where you explode.
And a lot of people now, as we call it, we just use the term like self-defense now. Because a lot of people do not like that because you're not the abuser and you're really just defending yourself.
Right. And it's also, we also have to look at what actually the nature of abuse is. And this is something that I remember really getting interested in with Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. I'm not going to talk about the case, but what I found interesting in somebody that like a mental health professional that was actually analyzing the case was saying that the nature of abuse does not allow for two people to abuse each other. So I've heard often people say like, well, so-and-so went at this person for so long and they're just coming back at each other and they're just abusing each other. There actually can't be a situation where two people are abusing each other because there can only be one person in power. In an abusive relationship, there's an imbalance of power and control. You have somebody that's up here, the abuser, that has all of the power and control or most of it. And then you have the person that's being abused that has no power and control. In order for two people to abuse each other, that's basically saying, like with reactive abuse, well, this person also has power and control within this relationship. And we know that that's not true. So the term that I had been taught after reactive abuse or self-defense is also battered women syndrome, where, if you've been abused for long enough, if you're acting out, if you're starting to be angry, if you find yourself having emotional outbursts, for me, I have a lot of difficulty making decisions. It's hard for me to choose something as, silly as which rice to buy in a supermarket. I can feel myself actually coming into almost a meltdown because I can't decide whether I want brown rice or white rice. What I learned is that when I was being abused, my brain was trying to decide whether to run or stay. It was constantly between fight or flight. So I was always using the deciding part of my brain to figure out, is this when I leave? Do I need to get out now? Should I call 911? Am I being abused? So I was constantly asking myself to make decisions. And I unfortunately broke that part of my brain. So now in a normal situation, when I'm asking myself to make decisions, it causes me an intense amount of distress. So those are the steps that I took. They worked for me. What I'm hoping is that somebody else is hearing this and is able to say, okay, now I have maybe some actionable items, things that I can do, ways that I can help myself. I also want to say, and Gavin mentions this in his book, The Power of Intuition. So you, as an abuse victim, I found, and I'm using victim, survivor, whichever term you prefer, it's each person has their preference. When you are in the situation, you are constantly seeking validation from external sources. You are looking for others to tell you that you're being abused, for others to tell you you were right in the situation, for others to help clarify. And the honest truth of it is part of the reason that you're in the situation is because of that. You need to build your self-confidence muscle and understand that the only opinion that matters is yours. Ask yourself every day, am I safe? Am I happy? Am I supported? Not everyone's going to be happy in every relationship all the time. But if you feel like you cannot speak to your partner without fear of retribution, if you feel like you can't wear what you want to wear, say what you want to say, go where you want to go, if you can't enjoy an evening out with friends without feeling like you are going to pay for it when you get home, that is all the information that you need. Whether or not you feel safe and secure within the relationship. Intuition, if your intuition is telling you that you are unsafe or you feel scared, your primal instinct is screaming at you for help. And intuition is like, it's like a sober friend at a party full of drunk people. It is only speaking the truth. It only knows the truth. And the truth is, if your intuition is kicking off, I don't feel right. Something doesn't feel right here. I feel like I'm not in a relationship like the other relationships I've been in, or I think I might be being abused. Your intuition is trying to help you live. So never, ever dampen that voice. That voice is really crucial to you building the self-confidence, believing in yourself, and trusting your own gut, because your gut's never going to lie.
So now that we've gone over this list, you know, it took a lot to leave for you. And then eventually you do leave your situation. So what was that experience like of leaving, getting to safety? How has your life changed since then? And how has your children's life changed as well since then?
For the leaving, I didn't choose the domestic violence shelter option, although I do think that's a great option for most. I decided to just, you know, I actually didn't even say it to him. He said, he had said this a lot, but I'm kicking you out, or you need to leave, or we're splitting. So what I did was I basically said, okay, I understand. I think I'm not, this is probably going to make people angry if you're in this, but I'm clearly not what you need. I took kind of I think you can do better. I think you can probably find someone that's going to give you everything that you want in life. And I don't think that it's me. So I ended up going with that route. The reason that I did that was that's basically like a version of gray rocking. For everybody, if you don't know what gray rocking is, it's being emotionless. It's not giving your abuser fodder to, you know, come at you and attack you with. It's just, okay, I'm going to go. I don't think I'm the right partner, and I'm going to leave. And I just went, I found an apartment complex that I liked, and I just signed. I didn't even think about it. I just went there. I'm like, I'm signing the lease. I'm signing the lease. I'm signing the lease. I signed the lease. I felt super guilty about it after, which I expected. And then I reminded myself of everything. I read my journal. Like I said, I went back and read it, went, oh yeah, this was terrible. Okay. I made the right decision. So I did feel some heavy, strong doubts along the way. Then I moved into the place. I felt great when I got in there. And then I felt tremendous amounts of shame. Look at me running away from this relationship. Look, I couldn't even, you know, I wasn't strong enough to even fix my marriage. Then I had to fight that again. I had to go look in the journal. I had to remind myself. I had to talk to my therapist. That's when I was saying, like, oh, abused woman leaves and cuts her hair and enjoys her new life. That's where that's not going to be. Then I had to fight the grief of losing my relationship. I had to dive into activities that I enjoyed. I was a dancer in a former life, so I started taking dance classes. I really just had to constantly manage my thinking and remind myself why I was there and that this wasn't just me running away from, you know, I didn't want to work on my marriage. I got there. And then as I spent time there, my therapist told me this early on when I met her, but she said, it's going to take 2 weeks. For the first 2 weeks, you're going to do nothing but want to go back. You're going to miss your abuser. You're going to want, long for that stability, even though it's, most people would say, what stability? I mean, that's nutty. But you meant the ocean in the beginning, you want the water back. You want that first step into the ocean where you felt great and things were beautiful and warm. That's what you're always trying to get back. So, you know, I kept trying to step back into the shallow part of the ocean. Can't do it. Once I was there, I saw my daughter start to thrive. So my daughter was no longer in a hostile, you know, environment. She was getting, she saw me being a mother. She saw me actually momming without fear. You know, she saw me just being able to be a mom and a worker and a pet owner. She saw me just completely change. And I think when she saw that, I saw in her, it was like a mirror. All of a sudden I could see her relax. My ex and I do share custody of her at the moment, which is difficult. But he's, you know, good with her and things are okay in that regard. But it's hard, you know. I think the divorce part has not happened yet. We're still in that process. So the story is not 100% complete, and that I'm still, you know, married to my narc, but my life has gotten exponentially better. Once those 2 weeks passed and I started living freely and wearing what I want and eating what I want and listening to what I want, watching the TV shows I want to watch without, you know, being mocked. I mean, something as silly as that, you know, think about that. Like, are there TV shows that you avoid because you're going to be made fun of for watching something? So the symptoms from my CPTSD have greatly relieved themselves. I actually developed dystonia at some point. Dystonia is like, I had my body was twitching. I couldn't stop moving. I went to a doctor. I thought I had a serious issue. And they said, your stress level is so high that you've developed dystonia, and I couldn't stop my movements. My arms were moving. My head was jerking around. I mean, it was nutty, and that's gone away. I'm sitting here talking smoothly. I'm able to move without any issue. That's how my life has gotten better. And I hope it for anybody that's listening. I want the same thing for you too. I want you to feel what I feel. And you, that missing, you know, that trauma bond, it's going to break. And when it does, you're going to be like, what was I? I'm okay. Like, I was so in love with that person, but now that I'm out of it, oh my goodness, what was I thinking? Like, you're going to have those light bulb moments too. So give yourself space and time for that. I promise you it will happen.
And if you had any words of wisdom for everyone listening that you haven't already imparted on everyone, what would they be?
The words of wisdom, I actually heard this in Gavin De Becker's book. He talks about a woman who has gone to file for a restraining order, and she's talking to him about, you know, the abuse that she's been suffering, and then says, well, I'm, you know what, forget it. I think I just better go back. And he asks her at that moment, what would happen if this were happening to your daughter? How do you think you would react differently? And she said, well, I would kill him. I mean, I'd make sure he never walked the earth again if this was happening to my child, if somebody was doing to my child what's happening to me. And he said, right, that's because your daughter has you and you don't have you. And pretty soon your daughter won't have you either. So what that story really is your life, your existence, your self-assuredness, your care for yourself are so crucial to getting yourself out of this situation. I know that there's this cliche of love yourself and you're the best and you've got to love you in order to do anything else. But in this particular situation, specifically, if you're experiencing domestic violence, you rediscovering how amazing you are and the stuff that you've been through, as I was saying before, how much stronger you are than your abuser, you discovering that and believing it is crucial to getting yourself out. So whatever that means, whether that means you're reinvesting in an old hobby, whether it means you're actually daily going into the mirror and being like, I'm good. I love me. I'm great. I've got things to offer the world. Even when you're feeling the lowest about yourself, which you know you felt, you have to find ways to remember that person that once was, get them back and love them like you would love somebody else. You know, because you are all you have.
Well, Maude, I really want to thank you for being here with me, with all of us today. And, you know, so many people emailed me after you had the original episode come out, your original survivor story, just wondering if you were okay. And eventually, you know, throughout time, when people started to listen to it, you know, September rolled around, October, I would still get emails from people and I would say, like, she's okay. she's left and she's doing all right. And then when we removed the episode, I got emails from people saying, where is that episode? Because they wanted your episode for a lot of people was a source of validation, just helpful in every single way for people who are struggling, whether they were in the relationship or they were out of the relationship. So you coming back here and imparting all of your knowledge from what you were doing, that's different from what a lot of people say to do. You know, people say there's a lot of people out there who are selling like courses and things like that of how you recover from this type of stuff. But, you know, for you, you know, that stuff isn't going to work. And for a lot of people, that stuff isn't going to work as far as like how you get yourself out of the situation first. You know, how do you cut the cord? How do you go through this process? And I just want to really, you know, a big, big thank you for just being here and being you and caring enough for other people to, you know, want to be here and do this and help people get to safety, whether they're out of the relationship or in the relationship, you know, their peace of mind and to get them to a place of true healing. And I really, again, I just can't thank you enough for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Brandon. I wanted to add a tagline to this just really quick.
Go for it.
I didn't mention safety planning in my exit strategy. I just wanted to say that safety planning is very, very important. You can develop a safety plan with your local domestic violence shelter, with a police officer, with your therapist. So It is important to learn how to exit the relationship safely, because that is unfortunately the most dangerous time for most people in a situation like I was in. So I didn't mean to gloss over that. I was just making the assumption that this is the pre-work to the leaving, and that when you actually do the physical act of the leave that you do, it is very wise to have a solid confirmed safety plan in place for yourself. So I just want to say that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. It's been a pleasure being here. I wish each and every person out there that's listening a happy life, and I wish you life. I want you to live. So live, and live for you and your family, and understand that we have one turn on this merry-go-round. And if you are on this ride unhappy, and if you're feeling scared, you know, you get one pass at life. It's going to suck, but you can change it, and you can have a better remaining time. You know, you can have a better life as a result.
Well, thank you, Maude, for being here once again, and we'll put a link to her original episode in our show notes. And if you want to be a guest like Maude was today on our Survivor Story episodes, if you want to be a guest, go to narcissistapocalypse.com. Top of the page, there's a button that says guest form. When you click on that button, it takes you to our guest form page. And there you can read all of our instructions and either send us an email at narcissistapocalypse@gmail.com or fill out our guest form and press the submit button. And please do send it in the format that we ask for. Also at our website, we have a support group. So if you need support, you know, go to our support group page at narcissistapocalypse.com. Inside, you'll see that we have Zoom meetings every Wednesday night, Thursday afternoons, and Saturday nights. We have forum boards for you to post on to get the validation that you need from survivors just like you. It is a wonderful group of people on there, and you can make a lot of friends too. So if you need support, join our support group today. And if you need even more support, please do visit our friends at domesticshelters.org. At domesticshelters.org, they have articles and resources to help you make sense of what you're dealing with, what you're going through. They have every phone number, email address, web address for shelters and agency, no matter how big or small the town you are in. Domesticshelters.org has it there. So go to domesticshelters.org if you need extra support. And we have another friend of the show called Shelter Movers, and Shelter Movers can be found at sheltermovers.com. And what they do is they help you move all of your stuff out of your home and into storage. That can be for your pets and livestock too. So if you're trying to get out of domestic violence, coercive control, and you need help leaving your home, getting all of your stuff out of your home and into storage, sheltermovers.com, they can really help you. You know, this is only available in Canada right now, but it's also a donor-supported charitable organization. So if you need help from them or just want to donate to them, go to sheltermovers.com. And that is it for today's story, for today's episode. So for myself and Maude, we hope you have a good night.